Fantastic.
Is your mic working, Quinn?
Yes, the mic is working. You can see it right there.
Okay. Welcome to Why Don't We Dress for Dinner Anymore with our host, Teddy Krockman, senior style icon and rising star.
And Melissa Pierce, entrepreneur and documentarian. Today, we'd like to welcome our guests, Michelle Nadeem and Susan Kanoff. And I just want to give a brief introduction about both of them before we dig into our little chat for today. So welcome, Michelle and Susan. There are guests from Boston. So you're our first out of Chicago group of people that we're interviewing on our podcast. We've been typically interviewing people from the fashion industry in the Chicagoland area, since that's where we're from. But I met both Michelle and Susan on their Instagram live stream, which I appeared on. And I love both of them on Instagram and thought they'd make great guests for our show. So welcome our Boston guests, Michelle and Susan. Michelle and Susan created Kicking Cancer in Heels, which is a community for women living with cancer, their best lives through information, connection, and support. Michelle and Susan founded CLL, which stands for Chronic Lymphocytic Leukemia, Women Strong, a national support group for women living with this disease. Both Michelle and Susan are committed to engaging, educating, and empowering women. Michelle Nadeem Baker has worked nationally as a broadcast journalist and globally as a global chief communications officer for well-known consumer publicly traded multi-billion dollar corporations. Susan Kanoff is the founder of Uncommon Threads, a nationally featured nonprofit that serves low-income women. Out of her unique mix of experience and skills as a social worker, wardrobe stylist, and style blogger. Susan's blog, The Midlife Fashionista, and her Instagram page by the same name have been important tools for attracting national attention to the program. So again, welcome Michelle and Susan. We're so happy to have you today on our show. I'd like to start by talking a little bit about the chronic form of cancer that you both currently have. It's called chronic lymphocytic leukemia, CLL. I myself have gone through cancer treatment. I had HER2 positive breast cancer. So I do understand the struggle of undergoing intensive treatment while trying to continue with going on my everyday life. And of course, my cancer came on right in the midst of COVID. So it was really like a double whammy at that particular point. I started following Susan first on her Midlife Fashionista because I thought her style and her look was so fabulous. So I was one of her followers, and then she started following me. And I found her positive outlook and fashion styling to be really inspirational. I also gravitated to the Instagram account Kicking Cancer in Heels because it spoke to me as a cancer survivor who still loves to be stylish and assert my power through fashion. So I'd like to ask you both, and you can just jump in. Would you say that you both find power in fashion by making a statement about your ability to still function and lead successful and full lives? Or do you feel that because you both look so fabulous, that people may underestimate the struggles that you have in dealing with this form of chronic cancer? So would you say that dressing up helps to lift you into your everyday lives and kind of put your cancer diagnosis on the back burner? Or would you say that maybe people don't, or people underestimate what you are really dealing with on a day-to-day basis because you both look so fabulous? So whoever wants to answer first.
I would just quickly say yes and yes.
Yeah.
Both.
Me too.
Okay. So tell me both yeses then. Tell us both yeses.
Susan, you want to start and I'll take up the second one.
So first of all, thank you for having us. This is yes. So fun. We're really excited to be here. Teddy, I love you back and I love your style
thank
too.
You. Thank you.
So, I think it's both. And, you know, I just want to read a quote that's one of my favorites. It's Bill Cunningham, and he says, fashion is the armor to survive the reality of everyday life. And I'm giving a talk on Thursday and to like 300 people. And that is something that I want to say at the talk, too. It is really kind of how we express ourselves. It can give us strength when we're going through tough times. So, yes, I feel, you know, both of us dressed up when we were in treatment, and we both felt like having a great outfit just made us feel better, made us feel more normal. But like Michelle said, it's a yes and a yes, because when people see you looking good, they also don't understand what's going on, you know, beneath the surface too. And I've had plenty of people say, oh, but you look great. You know, you must be doing great. No, I'm not.
You look so good. You
look so good.
Yeah, I understand that totally. I did try to, you know, cancer did not beat me down as far as fashion. I still went to my chemo treatments, dressed nicely as, you know, as best as I could. I mean, I wasn't, you know, overdressed, but I dressed nicely. And on top of that, I had to have the chemo mask on. So, you know, the lack of hair and the chemo mask wasn't the greatest look, but I still put my makeup on and, you know, did the best that I could with the way I look, because I think you're right. It's kind of a protective armor in a way, the way we look and dress. You know, it kind of lets the world know that we're still strong, at least to me.
And us, and internally, the message that we send internally to ourselves. And Michelle, did you find like it even boosted your self-esteem when you were going through it?
Absolutely. The more normalcy that we can bring into our lives while we're going through this, the healthier it is for us, I believe, emotionally and mentally as well, because there are so many components when you're going through treatment.
Yeah.
And, you know, looking in the mirror and not liking or even knowing who that is looking back is the more we can do to make that seem more normal. But, you know, even our name, Kicking Cancer in Heels, it comes from a few factors, all of what Susan said, but also for me, I always wore my favorite shoes to treatment with heels. And to me, looking down when you're in that chair and just looking down at those shoes, I'm like, I'm still me. There's still me inside. Yeah. And those helped empower me during treatment, as well as you were both saying it, and Susan said, we both did dress up. And as you said, Teddy, not over the top, but
So
I didn't want to wear schleppy clothes. And because that would make, to me, that would make me feel, just not as well, not as perky. And, but it does have the other side of it. But you look so good. And people saying, oh, you can't be sick. Look at how good you look. You know, you must be done with treatment. No, as a matter of fact, I'm still on treatment right now.
Yeah.
And you look great, right? No one knows, right?
And you do, you both.
I have to say one thing, full disclosure, Michelle looked way better in the chemo chair than I did. I was wearing my Cozy Earth sweats, but I did put a blog together about how to, you know, be comfortable. Cause I needed to be comfortable. I needed to wear slip-on sneakers so I could, you know, take them off easily when I was getting on the scale and all that. And Michelle had her heels. But
come on and off easily, you know, you just kick your pumps up.
There you go.
I don't wear many high heels these days, but I have to say that even just putting a beautiful, you know, cardigan over it or a wrap or a leather jacket made me feel better, you know, that one extra piece of clothing or a piece of jewelry or something.
Yeah. Right. I love how you both just talked about how you asserted your own particular needs about how to feel like you still had an identity outside of cancer. You're like, I needed comfort. I needed to feel okay in my own skin. And you're like, I needed to look down and see those heels because I'm an accomplished, incredible woman. I love that. It gives me goosebumps.
Well, and that shows you the power of fashion. Mm-hmm. And it's not just clothing. It's not just something that you put on your back because you need to stay warm or cool or whatever the season is. But I think that, especially when you're in not such a good place or you're not feeling well, and this isn't to dismiss people who, like Susan said, she wore her comfy clothes. It doesn't mean that you wore ratty comfy clothes. My guess is, Susan, that you were wearing a really cute little comfy, you know, jacket or whatever. So you could still look cute. You know, I'm saying, you know, I didn't maybe wear the most glamorous things, but I always put myself together. I always looked polished. I always looked put together, whether it was comfy or whatever. You always look, and it does lift your spirit and does make you feel a little bit more normalized. Like there's some more to my life than just dealing with this big, it's a big disease. Let's face it, with dealing with this big disease isn't going to take over my whole life. So it is a way, I think, and maybe the two of you would chime in, but isn't it kind of a way, it felt like it to me, a way of taking back a little bit of control. Like, you know, I'm not giving this whole thing over to just treatment. You know, I haven't given up my life and the things that I enjoy just because this is going to be part of my life for a while anyway.
Right. One kind of silly thing that I did was I used to put, I love my lipstick. I used to put my lipstick on, even though I wore a mask during treatment too. And even though I had a mask on, no one knew when it was all smudged. By the time I took it off, it was all over my face. But it felt normal. It felt like I was doing something for me.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I would always make sure what I wore was comfy. But even if it was, let's say, a longer dress that had room, because I would expand during treatment, you know, due to all the different things that you're being, that are being.
Right. All the liquids. Yeah.
Absolutely. But I would always have lipstick, as Susan said. As a matter of fact, we were the same color, unbeknownst to the two of us when we first met. And as well as I would always wear mascara. If anything, those were my two go-tos. And some days there'd be more, but I would wear makeup too, like Susan said, even with these masks on. You said it too, Teddy, because of the times. And also, you know, we're immune compromised being in treatment.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we really had to wear the mask because when you're undergoing chemo, you basically have no immune system. So we had to wear those masks. And I'm with you girls. I had my eye makeup on and I had my no smudge lipstick on underneath the mask, even though the no smudge lipstick after a while smudged a little bit too, you know. But yeah, just, you know, nobody could see my lips, but I figured, like, all right, I did my eyes. I want the lips to match just in case I need to slip that mask off or something. You never know.
Just in case.
But anyway, so you already answered the kicking cancer in heels. I was wondering how you came up with that particular name for your site. And I guess, Michelle, you answered it a little bit.
Partially. And the other is the kick.
Yeah.
You know, there is something to be said about giving there some action to empower yourself, to help you think of how, you know, to envision this, getting rid of this cancer, you know, get out of my body, kick it out. And Susan, it's funny, Susan and I have different ways of kicking it out, but we're both, it's a great visualization to think of some way to get rid of your cancer. And it is also, as you said, taking some control and thinking,
right,
I am doing something about this. Yes. And it doesn't have to be heels.
Do you find that dressing gives you this feeling of empowerment? Since you've worked in media, you've worked in communication, you've worked as a corporate media executive, and you know how important kind of this message and this perception of reality is. Do you feel that it is, I feel like empowering is a wrong word because it kind of means that like you didn't have power in the first place. And I find you to be a very powerful woman.
Let's put the cancer aside, just as a corporate executive.
Yes.
You know, we know that it's very powerful, the way you look, the way you present yourself, because you have to have a certain amount of authority and respect that you command. And so what would you say you did? What was your kind of go-to uniform, would you say, when you were
an executive?
Executive.
Well, and then when I'll tell you, I have returned to reporting. And so I still, I report again, but I report on oncology, but via video. And I tried, you know, everyone was like, oh, dress down, whatever. But I decided to keep my brand because to me, this is me. You know, looking professional, maybe it's the generation we grew up in, but I believe in always looking professional. And for me, my go-to outfit, Teddy, to answer you, you know, fashions change. So it was a suit in the beginning, and plus I was trying to look older, right? But as things went on, my absolute go-to, and generally it's Italian fashion, is a dress that is more straight, never A-line, with a matching jacket. And that way, and also being a certain age, I get hot all the time. And that started, and you know, when I was working in corporations, so I would still look very finished and polished when I take off my jacket. But to me, that was a very empowering look and outfit, and also fashionable, you know. And again, as styles change, that comes in and out of fashion. But that is my favorite.
I have to ask, is never A-line, is that a personal choice, or is that because there's a specific perception of A-line in an executive position?
Great question, both. So for me, personally, I do not look good in A-line, but A-line, you would have to style differently to still have the power, but something that is, you know, I would still look feminine, but for the power aspect, I feel that A-line would not present as powerful, and it would depend on how much of an A-line, like really poofing out. But, you know, now, you know, women wear what they love. And I think that's really important too, that if you love A-line, well, sure, that can be paired with a little short bolero jacket, which is in right now, like a cropped jacket. So that can still be powerful. And, you know, also pantsuits I would wear, and that's probably dating me saying pantsuits, right?
Teddy was just modeling them on television. They're totally in.
Saw them, that red brocade number. Oh my God, that was gorgeous.
Yeah.
Absolutely stunning.
Yeah. Donna Asadi, she's a local Chicago designer. She's great. We love her.
Right, Susan, you're also a stylist, and you also have like this like big this cornucopia of ideas in your head about how to dress for certain things. Can you tell us how you founded, what is it, Uncommon Threads, and what that is about?
Sure. So as you mentioned earlier, Teddy, I was a social worker.
Yeah.
During that time, I ran a federal program that moved low-income folks out of poverty, or at least tried to. It was pretty successful. And I did that for almost 25 years. But during that time, I mean, fashion has just been a passion of mine forever since I was a little kid. I don't know, Teddy, about you, but yes. I was little. Yeah. And so I used to dress my friends for weddings and events and everything. I dressed a friend and she said, "Oh my God, everybody wants your card." I'm like, "I'm a social worker. Who's going to hire me for clothes?" So I put cards together. I'll do anything. And I put cards together, and within a year or two, I was styling for Boston TV. I was a style editor for a local magazine. I had a lot of private clients. And so I did that, and I started a blog and Instagram. And a lot of my private clients wanted to find a place to put to bring their clothes when they didn't want them anymore. So they didn't like just throwing them in bins or dropping them off somewhere.
Or in the garbage.
So I started bringing them into my office. And I had a lot of single moms that I worked with. And this was all low-income families that I worked with. And so when someone was having a bad day, we'd put an outfit together, or if they were going on a job interview. I mean, thank God my office was large, because I had racks set up, and I thought my director was going to fire me. I mean, she's like, This is not what we hired you for, to put outfits together, you know. But what I noticed was how powerful clothes are. I mean, just what we were talking about. And this not program, I mean, it wasn't a program. It was just clothes in my office, ended up winning a Massachusetts Award for Innovation. So, yeah. And so
look at that.
I was, you know, in my 50s, and at age 55, I was able to take a retirement. An early retirement from my job. So I did that, and I founded Uncommon Threads, which is a nonprofit that taps into the power of fashion, not only as a basic need, because we all need clothes to keep safe and warm and healthy, right? But also as a tool for building self-esteem. So we work with low-income women who are referred to us. We give them wardrobe makeovers. The boutique does not look like a social service program. That was really important to me, that it looked like a beautiful boutique instead of, you know, I mean, I heard so many awful stories about, you know, my social work clients going to get their food stamps or going to a social service program, being a number, waiting in line. If they were 5 minutes late, they had to, you know, come another time after taking time up from work. So we really treat the woman holistically, and it's very warm and inviting, and it's beautiful. I mean, you'd think you were walking into a gorgeous boutique, and our clients get 4 outfits personally styled by our volunteer stylists, and accessories and shoes. And we have workshops, empowering workshops, and all of that. But it really all ties back to how important clothes are. I think they are really not taken seriously enough. Fashion is really important.
It is.
It really defines who we are.
It does. It absolutely does. And especially, I think, Susan, like you said, you don't even have to be ill. Just, you know, you're on hard times. You know, you money is tight. You need clothing, you know, your basic needs, you know, Maslow's basic needs, you know, food, shelter, clothing, you know, those are your basic things. But clothing, I think, goes beyond just a basic need. I think it's also, especially for women, an emotional need. I think if we look good, if we feel like we're dressed for success, because that's another program that we have. Well, I think it's all through the United States Dress for Success.
Yeah, they're focused on work, and we're focused
and they're
on
dressing women for work and power and that kind of stuff. But I mean, that just goes to show you the power of fashion, and that can really give women the little boost that they might need, especially in harder times, to get through whatever they need to.
Right. Oh, so you're saying Maslow had it wrong. Right? Clothes he put at the bottom. And the uncommon threads really is like clothes are at the bottom, clothes are at belonging, clothes are at self-actualization.
Yeah.
And I forgot what the fourth thing of Maslow,
Yeah.
But clothes are all the way up there because the fashion is really important. Did fashion become more important to you once you were diagnosed? Did that outward expression of how you dressed become more important to you?
I just first want to compliment Susan on Uncommon Threads. And also she mentioned they also have a boutique that all of us can go shop at. And she has styled me for when I go and cover things as a reporter and a program host. And she really has created such an incredible program with Uncommon Threads. And then also this boutique. And it
Uncommon
Threads.
It's a social enterprise. Yeah, all the money. We have a little annex of the program where anyone can shop for, you know, designer boutique kind of items. All the money goes back to supporting women. So
that's fabulous.
That's actually fantastic.
That's fabulous.
Thanks, Michelle.
Actually, Boston a lot. So I might see you.
Come on to Boston. Come shopping.
Yes, absolutely. So. And Melissa, to answer your question, no, fashion's always been important to me. And, you know, when Teddy and I were emailing, it dawned on me, and I've known this, I always say my mother created an expensive habit.
Me too.
My mother loved fashion, and she always dressed up. I mean, to go to the grocery store, she'd dress up and always had on her, you know, her red lipstick. So I don't fall far from the tree on that, except, you know, fashions were just so beautiful and the way clothes were made before. And I have some of her clothes, and I was trying to find something to wear tonight, but unfortunately my weight's a little up and she was very petite and nothing fit me to wear. Yeah. True confession here of hers, but she would always bring me with her. I was the youngest. So I was always just brought along and I would just witness all these beautiful clothes she would try on and think, you know, someday when I'm older, I'd like to dress that way. But that was my mother's sport. One of her main sports was shopping.
Well, and I think that is a big influence on a lot of girls.
Yeah.
I know my mom was very always fashionable, like you said, even going to the grocery store. And that was her motto. She always used to say to me, even if you're going to go to the grocery store, make sure that she'd always say, make sure you look presentable. That was her word, presentable. Yeah. Make sure you look presentable because you never know who you're going to run into. And the minute you think you're just going to go slap something on, run to the store, she says, I am telling you, Teddy, you're going to run into the one person you didn't want to see. And one time I did find that out. I just like ran out of the house to go get something. And I ran into some neighbor that I hadn't seen for like 15 years. And I thought, oh my gosh, I haven't seen this woman in 15 years. And this is how I had to look when I saw her. So I always heed my mom's advice on that. But I do think that as young women and young girls that we are influenced a lot, especially if we have moms who are into fashion or always making sure that they look really nice, et cetera. How about you, Susan? Because
I was just going to say, not me, my mother, nothing, no makeup, no hair, no hair, no clothes. She would, you know,
your mom was a nudist?
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, God.
I'm just kidding.
She's oh, like, I didn't hear you. I'm sorry.
She said your mom was a nudist.
You said
Yeah, no, she bought herself like, you know, she'd pee in the house coats during the day. She bought herself maybe like nothing wrong with L.L. Bean, but like two L.L. Bean things a year. You know, she did not, when she had to go somewhere, she had nothing to wear. She had a closet this big. I mean, I don't know where it came from. I have no idea.
Fashion.
Yeah. I think I actually got it from my best friend's mother, Barbara, who, when I would go over my friend Diane's house, we would play in her bedroom. She would let us pull all her clothes out. Her Estee Lauder makeup, would slap it all over her face. We'd pull out her jewelry. I mean, I never let my daughter do that. And she would just let us have at it. We'd play shoe store. And I think that sparked that fun, the passion for it.
So even though it wasn't your mom directly, it wasn't specifically your mom, it was somebody else's mom.
It was a mother figure.
But it was in your formative years, you had somebody, because it wasn't just my mom either. My mom always, you know, tried to look her best, but I also had an aunt who was really a shopaholic. This woman would buy clothes. This was funny. She would buy like beautiful clothes. But every time you saw her, she was wearing almost the same outfit. And I'd be like, Aunt Connie, you have so many clothes in your... And she would leave the tags on them. And she'd say, well, I'm going to wear that when I have somewhere really nice to go. Oh, so like 90% of her clothes were never worn because she's always waiting for this special event to happen where she was going to wear
the outfit. Big mistake. I'm like, wear the clothes, use the dishes, enjoy.
Use the china.
I'm like, what do the two therapists think?
I know exactly. What would that mean? My sister does that. I have a sister who's 10 years older, and she was always extremely fashionable, and she lived in Manhattan. And so as a teen seeing that, it was just that I wanted to do everything she did at that point.
Of course. Yeah. She was the chic sister in Manhattan that you looked up to.
Right. And I just wanted to be Cyndi Lauper. That was it.
My
mom wasn't fashionable. I grew up with brothers. I just wanted to be Cyndi Lauper. I thought she was the coolest artist on earth.
And she is. So nothing wrong with that.
My age. Did you know? Yeah. Cyndi Lauper is 70 years old, just like me. So there you go.
It's amazing. She still is amazing.
She is amazing. Oh, so what are your favorite eras of fashion? Mine obviously is Cyndi Lauper's 80s time. But what about the two of you? Favorite eras?
I was trying to think of it. You know, there's something great about all of them, I feel like. I mean, there's something lovely about the glam that we used to have years ago, you know, the Hollywood chic and all that. But, you know, some of that's still in, like the animal print, you know, for coats and that, you know. So I think it's a little bit of everything. I don't think, I'm not good with favorites because I like so many different things.
You like it all.
But you know, the funny thing is everything comes back around anyway. So, you know, we got the bell bottoms, we got the tie dye, we get the overalls again. I mean, it doesn't really matter because everything comes around.
Yeah. Fashion is cyclical. You sound just like another woman that we interviewed who has a social media company, and we asked her what her favorite era was. She says, I love it all. I'm just here for it all. And that's great. Some people, you know, just they love fashion so much. There is no like one era that they're just like so over the moon about. It's like, I like something in every era. There's always something really great in every era.
I think we have to change this question to be, if you were stranded on a desert island with one era of fashion.
Okay.
Right. Michelle, you are the first person who's going to answer the question. If you were stranded on a desert island with one era of fashion, what would it be?
Like Susan, I love all different eras and I save things. Well, wait, and I save things, you know, like, and I like today having a combination of different eras of things, you know, but gosh, that is a really great question, Melissa. So I have to say, I'm thinking this through, maybe the 80s for me as well, you know, because there was people dressed up a bit more. I think shoulder pads maybe were still there, which is always a great thing to help our waist look smaller. Big hair. My hair wants to be big naturally. So it would be so much easier if my hair could enter the room before I do, because instead of spending so much time blowing it out and doing everything else to it.
Yeah.
So I have to say that, you know, and that I just remember I had some really fabulous things back then. That were really, I see them in pictures. I'm like, oh, that was really cool.
Right. It wasn't like a really cool, really glamorous era.
Yeah. Everything was kind of over the top. Remember Dynasty and Dallas, all those.
Thinking that. Yes. Nolan Miller.
Miller was huge. Yes.
I remember the suits that had all the embellishments on them. And
I had some really cool, jackets with like, big shoulders and stuff hanging off of them.
Yeah. There's, you're right. There's something really lovely in almost every era that you can pick out. But, you know, I just gravitate towards, for me, it was the 30s and the 70s. Love them both. If I was stranded on a desert island, I'd be a mix of the 30s and the 70s.
Right.
So I'd have the bell bottoms on, but I'd have like a satin chemise top on for to represent the 30s. You're I just love this.
All I can think about in the 70s were hakapu shirts. Do you remember hakapu shirts?
I do.
The what shirts?
Hakapu.
Hakapu.
I don't even know hakapu. What that is. What is that?
They were these like kind of cheap polyester fabric with these kind of crazy prints on them. And I had a whole collection. I had a whole collection of them.
Me too. That's so funny.
And the 70s was in my prime. I was in my late teens, early 20s in the 70s. And I never
look it up. Maybe you had one and you don't remember.
You just don't even know what it was called.
I didn't know the name of it. Maybe I wore it. It doesn't sound familiar to me.
They were big. They were big.
They were. I mean, and I even know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. Well, it's like had to have the hakapu shirts.
Had to have
How do you spell that?
H-U-C-K-A-P-O-O, maybe?
Oh, it's P-O-O. Okay.
We're going to look it up. We will throw it up on the screen for those of you watching. For those of you listening, I'm so sorry. I'll link you to it.
I have no clue what that is, but maybe I have one. So
to
wrap up our podcast for today, we always ask the last question, and that is, why do you think we've become so casual? Because you mentioned the glamour of the 80s. Susan loves it all. I love the 30s and the 70s. Melissa likes Cyndi Lauper and her 5,000 hair colors. Why do you think that we've become such a casual dress society? It seems to me, and maybe I sound like the old lady of the group, but to me, it does sound like, because I lived through the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. Oh, please, I don't want to go in all the decades. But it seems like in the 2000s, especially, everything has become so very laid back.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? Do you have any like observations on kind of the casualization of our society? I mean, I even see people dressing very casually now. Remember weddings when at least they'd write on the card black tie, or it'd be what was the other they would call it? I'm trying to remember the name.
Cocktail attire.
What is it?
Cocktail attire.
Yeah. You know,
I just went to a wedding. Someone wore jeans.
Now people come to weddings and they look like they're just wearing like
they look like the ushers.
Well, even worse. I don't know if you heard me, but I just went to a wedding and someone was wearing jeans. I mean, jeans to a funeral. I mean, it is definitely a different time. I think once people got used to being comfortable, I think comfort was a huge part of it. And, you know, there's a stat, I think it's like 80% or something like that of Americans dress casually at work now. I mean,
yes.
Huge. It's huge, right?
You think it came from Coco Chanel, like invented jersey, and that was a downfall of, or she started using jersey in her clothing, and that was a downfall of everything?
Maybe it could be fabric related. I don't know the exact reason, but I feel like comfort, and maybe it is fabrics. We got used to more knits and, you know, and comfy fabrics, more elastic waist, you know, that kind of thing. People wore jeans all the time. Jeans became the new black pants. But we've become very casual. I'm sorry?
I said now people don't even want to wear jeans. Jeans, pants.
They want to wear joggers.
They're hard pants.
Yeah, now it's leggings. Yeah, leggings. And I also have these pants. Actually, I like them. I think I got them at J. Crew. They're called Pixie Pants. And
I know those.
They're like leggings, but they're thicker, so they almost look like pants leggings.
They're so comfortable and really narrow. And
yeah, those are nice.
But I think, you know, we became comfortable, and I think the pandemic hit, and then everybody was so, I mean, me included, so used to being in sweats all day or pajamas till 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, doing a Zoom meeting and being dressed on the top and on the bottom, you know, they're in, you know, I mean, I still do that sometimes, but oops, I just said that. I think once we started to go that route, it was like, you know, a runaway train. We just couldn't quite get off of it.
Do you think we ever will?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
I thought, the pandemic, even I acquiesced to, like Susan said, and even for this, I thought you were going to have us show everything we had on at first. And I was like, oh my God, I can dress from the waist up really well. But, you know, the entire thing has been so long since, you know, I've been trying to recycle some things. And I was really good this summer and bought a replenish my wardrobe, but I haven't quite done it yet. For the winter, I'm like, what the heck am I going to wear? But I do think, I hope that dressing up will come back. But I had read, and I think it was a year and a half or 2 years ago, that we were going that trend, but then it didn't happen, you know, because of the pandemic, that people, and I don't know if it was the fashion industry trying to convince everyone. I don't know if any of you saw the articles that had come out, and one was in the Wall Street Journal, and it was about ties were coming back in for men, which really surprised me. Cause I thought, okay, maybe, you know, sports coats or whatever.
Yeah.
But the tie, but I have personally, I don't know about you. Yeah. I've seen it.
Yeah. And I don't think the younger generation is going to wear ties. I mean,
cufflinks are going extinct.
Do you know that my son, who is 44 years old, you know, probably tell, he doesn't watch the podcast anyway, so I don't care. But my son, who's 44 years old, does not know how to tie a tie.
Really?
And I believe that.
One time he had to wear a tie, my husband had to tie it on him. Because he didn't even know how to tie a tie.
I don't think my son does either. My son owns a video game company, so he's a techie. I mean, when does he ever get dressed up? He wears old clothes all the time, you know, and I think
a real thing.
Someone would have to tie his tie for him. For
sure. Isn't it
something? They don't wear them. Nobody wears them.
Her husband doesn't want to wear it.
Yeah, I know.
Now, I do make him wear a tie every now and then. If we're going somewhere and I'm dressed really glam, he's going to match me. So he's got to slap that tie on. And I'll go, do I have to wear a tie to this thing? If it's a fashion event, usually he does. I'll let him just wear the open shirt with the jacket or whatever. But occasionally if it's, you know, ultra glam, I'm telling him, you know, you better slap that tie on, Jack. I don't care what. But I think especially don't like that, you know, tie scrunching up their necks. I don't think they've ever really liked that. I think women kind of acclimated to the discomfort of clothes for beauty. Remember the old slogan, you have to suffer for beauty, you know? But now I don't think, you're right, I don't think the younger generation wants to give up that level of comfort. I mean, they won't even wear pantyhose anymore. And let me just say one thing. If I only accomplish one thing today, I want to say what I think about pantyhose, and I am so tired of hearing people say that they hate pantyhose. I'm going to say something. Ladies, 90% of you do not have good-looking legs without pantyhose. I'm sorry. Your bare legs just don't look good.
You know,
now let me tell you something. When you get to be my age and your knees are all wrinkly, you want an instant lift for your knees, put on a pair of pantyhose. I can look just as good as a 20-year-old if I got on a pair of pantyhose because I still have good damn legs. But if I don't have those pantyhose on, you're going to see wrinkly knees, which isn't attractive. And, you know, so I don't, and I hear from women, and it's usually the, well, it's even my generation. But anyway, they'll say, they're so uncomfortable, but you'll squeeze yourself into a pair of Skims or Spanx to make yourself look thinner. That doesn't seem to discomfort you, but a lousy pair of pantyhose is too uncomfortable.
That's so funny.
To be uncomfortable. Pantyhose are not that uncomfortable. Ladies, wear the damn pantyhose. Your legs look much better.
This is right, so
but funny. I have to say one thing. I'm sure your knees are gorgeous, and own your knees because you know, I'm all about, you know what, if wear what you want and be comfortable and be happy and feel confident. And I think you're gorgeous, Teddy, and I'm sure your knees look beautiful.
No, my knees look terrible.
I can't around. Yeah. This is the only clip that's making it to social media, obviously. Teddy's rant and you complimenting your knees.
I just love you, Teddy. I think if it makes you feel more comfortable wearing them.
It does.
And I say, I bet you have great knees.
Where do you find pantyhose? They don't even sell them.
I still have a collection.
They're in some stores.
You know, I used to be able to buy them at the grocery store. Remember those days, Lee?
Oh, yeah. No.
I have to go on Amazon, actually, now to get my pantyhose because they don't sell them anywhere because nobody wears them. Now, I would say this. Yes, I agree. A lot of women do find pantyhose uncomfortable. But I really think the demise of pantyhose, in my estimation, is because so many women wear pants now. I mean, I remember even back, you know, before I retired, which I've been retired for, I think, 5 or 6 years now. I used to be really virtually almost the only woman in the office who would wear a skirt or a dress to work. Almost always, all the other women were wearing pants. And because you're wearing pants, you really don't need pantyhose, you know, because nobody's seeing your wrinkly knees. But I think really it's that women wear pants so much that really became the demise of pantyhose.
And even think about the styles too. You know, now we wear a lot of high boots with, you know, so you're kind of covering your legs with longer skirts.
Right.
Or mini dress.
A variety of reasons, but I'm trying to be the champion of brand.
I'll tell you another benefit. There are two other benefits to pantyhose. One is they suck your tummy in.
Yes. Without being perfectly tight.
My biggest challenge by not wearing hose are shoes. They rub more when you don't have something on your feet. Yeah. But I have to confess, I have not worn pantyhose since, I don't even know.
Probably the 2000s, probably early.
I was going to say maybe 2000, I don't even know. Four, I don't know, around there.
Yeah,
and I just
it was a sign of being a modern woman to not wear hose. Yes.
I think it started with the red carpet and a lot of the movie stars wearing their legs all shiny. Remember they put that shiny stuff on their legs and stuff like that. But really, ladies, most of you don't have really great legs. Put on a pair of pantyhose.
That's funny.
There's a riot.
She's cutting me off. She's
Melissa, do you wear pantyhose?
I do not.
Ever?
And your legs would look better with a pair of pantyhose.
You know what? Okay, so Teddy, I'm going to send you mine. I have a whole drawer full that I never wear. You can have them all.
Yeah, I have them too.
That's right.
Well,
thank you
so much, ladies. You were delightful as always. Beautiful, inspirational. I love you both.
Absolutely fabulous.
And hopefully we'll get to talk to you another time if this podcast lasts.
I love your podcast.
We're not having a pantyhose conversation.
No more pantyhose. Tights are another story.
Right, tights. Oh, you know what? We're trying to end this, but I'm like, oh, you know what? I wear those leggings that are shearling. They have the fuzz on the inside that are skin colored. And then I will put my hose over it.
Why do you do my, that?
No, because I lost the word for the ones that have the crisscross that look like a fence.
Fishnets. You put
in the winter.
Oh, you put flesh color socks over fishnets?
It is a flesh colored legging that has shearling on the inside. It's like they're super warm. I'm from Chicago. This is important.
Oh my God.
This is important.
He's not looking impressed.
I got to straighten her out.
You know what? Yeah, I think you do.
She's off the beam.
Love textured hose. Love them.
I love fishnets. Yeah. I do love
you them. You do. And your knees still look good in those.
They do.
Yeah.
They do.
All right. We're going to cut all of that out. We love you both and hope you have a great day. Thank you so
much. Thanks so much, ladies.
Thank you
so much. Bye-bye, guys.
This was so fun.
Bye. You probably think we've lost our minds.
We have. It's too late for you to.